No.
Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay. We are 33.
It may be argued that since Daksha was the father-in-law of Shiva, it was certainly the duty of Lord Shiva to offer him respect. In answer to that argument, it explained here that when a learned person stands up or offers obeisances and welcome, he offers respect to the super soul who is sitting within everyone's heart. It is seen, therefore, among Vaishnavas that even when a disciple offers obeisances to a spiritual master, the spiritual master immediately returns the obeisances because they are mutually offered not to the body but to the supersoul. Therefore, the spiritual master also offers respect to the supersoul situated in the body of the disciple. The Lord says in Srimad Bhagavatam that offering respect to his devotee is more valuable than offering respect to him. Devotees do not identify with the body, so offering respect to a Vaishnava means offering respect to Vishnu. It is also stated that, as a matter of etiquette, as soon as one sees a Vaishnava, one must immediately offer him respect, indicating the super soul sitting within. A Vaishnava sees the body as a temple of Vishnu. Since Lord Shiva had already offered respect to the super soul in Krishna consciousness, offering respect to Daksha, who identified with his body, was already performed. There was no need to offer respect to his body, for that is not directed by any Vedic injunction. Right? Because even if he was offering, he would be offering to the supersoul, not to Daksha. And by that same rule, if you're saying he should, then Daksha should be offering respects to Shiva. Right? Yes?
Then, if in this case, he's meant to pay respect to the supersoul, anybody is meant to be paying respect to the supersoul, then in that case, he should be paying respect to everything, like all the plants and animals.
If you got the time, go for it.
But why would you discriminate between one super soul and another?
Because it's a matter of the living entity is in the position of acting in a relationship with the super soul.
Okay.
While all the others, they're not.
And the senior, more like.
And the other point is once you offer to the super soul, you have offered to all living entities, because super soul is just one. There's only one super soul. You understand?
Yeah.
The super soul in all bodies is one person. Yeah. He's just differently situated.
Yeah.
So there's no need to offer to all of them.
Okay. But we do offer respect to the senior Vaishnavas.
Yeah, but also to other Vaishnavas.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. I'm just saying,
because you've already offered respect to the super soul, so since you've done that, you've offered to the super respect in those others. So here you're offering respect to the Vaishnavas that are with the super soul. But if it's just to the super soul, that by doing it once, you've already done it. So therefore, then it's the aspect of the Vaishnavas that are with the super soul. You understand? The point is being made in sense. Shiva is meditating on the super soul out of respect. He's already respected the super soul in Daksha's body, so there's no need for him to offer obeisances to Daksha. Does that make sense? That's the point that's being made.
So, but this is only applicable to Shiva, somebody like Shiva who is on that position of transcendence.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, if you ever see Shiva not offering obeisances to anybody and he's in meditation, then don't get upset. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, quote, I am always engaged in offering obeisances to Lord Vasudev in pure Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is always pure consciousness, in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Vasudev, is revealed without any covering. Because there's no modes of nature. So Vasudev Sattva means that there's no covering. It's just Vasudev. You're seeing him now. How much you understand of Vasudev, that's another thing. Right? You see him as Brahman, as Paramatma, as Bhagavan. To what degree you see him as Bhagavan, how much of the devotion is there, what realm you get to. That's all then depending upon that particular intent, association, endeavor. Right? But from that platform you can see, just like those in the Brahman can see Vasudev and see he's the transcendental position. But they're not, if they're not interested of worshipping him in devotion, then they'll come into the material world when the creation starts. Yes?
But here we talk about Lord Shiva as Vaishnava.
Yes.
So he's Vasudev Sattva.
But he's on the, but is on the Bhagavan platform. There's others on Paramatma, there's others on Brahman. Right? So the whole point is just because you're on the Brahman platform doesn't mean that there's any interest in the Lord. It just means if there's no body, right, then how, what is there to constrict the soul? You understand? That's there. But there's no false ego and goodness, passion and ignorance. Right? So what's to restrict the soul from understanding his position as soul and that of the Lord, as the Supreme Soul? Yes, but I'm saying technically there's nothing to balk that. But, so the only thing, consideration is what is his consciousness in viewing the spiritual platform. Right? So if it's still that I want to control and enjoy, then you just wait around a little bit until the Brahma makes the manifestation and you'll get a body so you can. If you see yourself as Brahman, then you'll be there for some time, but you'll still come into the material world because you can only get into the spiritual world by having a relationship with the Personality of Godhead. Right? So if you're not a devotee, you will take birth in the material world. It's just a matter of the difference is, though the materialists, or who are not on that liberated platform, when they are, when the Lord breathes in, they're merged into the body of the Lord and they're unconscious. While those who are on the platform of Brahman Paramatma realization, they will be conscious, and so they will be in that Brahman state, you know, of being on the transcendental platform. But when the creation happens again, they will go back into the universes. Right? So they'll have spent a good amount of time in the liberated state. Right? But those who were unconscious in Vishnu, when they come out, when he breathes out, they'll be on the Vasudev platform, but their interest is only in material enjoyment. So they don't have specific, because it's not manifest, but they have the generic, I want to control and enjoy. Right? So the karmi will have that mood, so it's just a matter of the supreme position is there, but you want to enjoy that. Does that make sense? Yeah. And the jnanis, then they will understand higher level of the soul, but because they don't understand Bhagavan, they will also come into the material world, but in a better state. You know, they'll be on that platform of jnana. You know, so they'd be these sages and other such personalities. Does that make sense? Yes.
And when we talk about Lord Shiva, technically that's a post, a jewel that he
does. It's a post, but at the same time, it is his post. Just like Maya, you could say, is a post, but it's a person that she does it. You know, there's one Maya Devi, and then she expands into each universe. Just like there's Karanodakshaya Vishnu, he expands as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and then expands as Kiradakshaya. So there's one, there's Rama Devi, and then she expands into each universe. Just like there's Sada Shiva, and he expands into each universe.
So technically, him being in Vasudev Sattva, that's not exactly correct?
No, he's on the platform of Vasudev Sattva.
No, not on the platform, in Mahatattva.
Yeah, technically it's not, but because he deals with it. See, Vishnu doesn't deal. The energy transforms. It means he only deals with internal potency. That internal potency transforms. So he is the Purusha that deals with the transformed energy. When the internal becomes external, Vishnu then transforms, becomes Shiva. So therefore, Shiva has the, occasionally he can be affected by, you know, it's just like the husband may be affected by the nature of the wife. We're just trying to be nice. Okay? You know what I'm saying? So Shiva, but his position, you can see how he's renounced and everything, so it's going to be more rare that that'll happen. Right? Well, if you have a dancing dog, then, you know, that's going to be, that's a given. You know, that's a 143%, right? You know, so. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes?
I'm just trying to understand this. Like, if we pay obeisances to all Vaishnavas, but we still pay obeisances to more, like, specific, like, you know, like teachers, parents, or...
This is all etiquette. Because you're remembering this there. So, because we're people. So there's the principle of all the Vaishnavas, or the Lord and His creation, or like that. Then there's the specifics of our relationship with people.
Yes.
So then you're doing both.
Okay. Because if it's about the Supersoul, then Supersoul is everything. So there must be some... I'm trying to understand what the relation is.
Because you have a relationship with the Vaishnavas, not with those 5 million ants walking over there.
Okay.
You don't know they're there. You don't. So in other words, you're only connected with that which you're conscious of.
Right.
You know, it's just like if you say, it's just like it was explained before, Prahlad Maharaj wants to benefit the whole world. He says, let everybody get benefited, let them all go back to Godhead. So look, Krishna appreciates that, but it's only applied to those people he knows. You understand? Just like when it says 21 generations are saved by the devotee, 10 before, 10 after, and himself. The 10 before don't mean you go back 10 generations from this life. You go how many you knew in this life. Then you go to the previous life, and then how many you knew there. You understand? And that way you get 10. Right? So it means, let's say this, you know your father, you know your grandfather. So that's two generations. Then life before that, two generations. Like if you knew your great-grandfather, that might be three. If you only knew your father, one.
Yeah.
Until you get 10. And then it would be, if you didn't go back to Godhead, and things had carried on according to how the modes would have carried it out, who would have been your relatives, then that next 10 is also saved.
Okay, so there's two.
You understand? So
it,
there's super soul and relationships, but super soul is also a relationship. Because you've offered obeisances to super soul, there's one super soul. But you're going on, but there's billions of living entities, so what about all the super souls? They're not separate super souls, there's one super soul. One.
Then why is it that we have to...
It's because there's people, you have relationships. Can't you work with two things at once? Please. Try. You know, there's the theoretical things, and then there's the application in the personal sense. You have a body; it has relationships with other bodies. Those bodies you have relationship. Like your teacher, you have to offer your respects to. Who's not your teacher, you don't. You know, you're on campus, right? There's hundreds of professors and teachers. You just have to be respectful to your teacher. If you bump into one of the other ones, you're nice. You understand? You go to the grade school. How many teachers are in the grade school? Tons of them. Who do you give the apple to? Your teacher. So you're respectful to teachers, but only when you interact with them, when you meet them. You don't have to go out of your way and go to each classroom and offer your respects, and then by the time you do that, then the afternoon bell rings and it's time to go home. You know what I'm saying? You're overthinking this way beyond necessity, because you're mixing two things, and then... Because the point is, if it's all done, then you don't have any obeisances. But then you're thinking, how am I going to offer obeisances? So you're mixing the personal with this other thing, and then you're going crazy. You understand? They're two separate things, and you apply them as it applies to you in your position. right? You're walking down the road, you see the sannyasi, you offer obeisances. You walk down the road, there are no sannyasis, you don't offer your obeisances. Does that make sense? Okay? Okay. Verse 30-23 is discussed by Srila Jiva Goswami in Bhagavat Sandarbha Anucheda 103. The word Vishuddha here means, because it is the Lord's internal potency, it is free from even the slightest touch of matter. And that is why the adjective Shuddha, pure, is used here. This Vishuddha Sattva is here called Vasudev Sattva. That is why is it called Vasudev Sattva? Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudev, is manifest because of it. Right? We can see the Lord because of Vasudev Sattva. That's a problem.
In what sense?
Okay, Krishna is standing before you. Krishna is the whole creation. How is it you can see him standing before you? How is he manifest in that form that you can appreciate? That's his internal potency. Right? So that's why it always says that Krishna manifests through his internal potency. Because he's bigger than the biggest, smaller than the small. How is it works out that you can see? Now, if he's here, how big is he?
Human size.
Yeah. What if he's on Brahmaloka? Then he's human size. You know, everybody be lean on.
I think he's around his son.
You know. You know what I'm saying? So by his internal potency, that's being done. Right? That he takes the different forms. He's Krishna. He's Varaha. He's Nisringa. That's all his internal potency. Does that make sense?
What's the difference between Vishuddha and Shuddha-sattva?
Between Vishuddha and Shuddha. V means it's like more. Like you have, what's the difference between flammable and inflammable? Flammable means it burns. Inflammable means it really burns. You understand? So Vishuddha means really Shuddha. Ekdam Shuddha. Okay? You going to be okay? Was it too strong? You understand? It's, the point is this. Using the intelligence is a very good thing, but learn to use it where you'll actually get a benefit. You know what I'm saying? Don't mix the two where you have the elements of the tattva and the culture. The culture is the manifestation of the tattva. But when you mix and don't discriminate, then that's where it starts to get weird. That how do I offer obeisances to all the unlimited? And then there's this universe, this unlimited universe. You know, it just goes on. It's just like the devotee goes, if it's by touch, I ate on the floor, I contaminated the floor, but the floor is connected to the walls, and the walls connected to the ceiling, and it's connected to the ground. And so, I took lunch. The whole planet is contaminated. But you have devotees; they'll do that. So you have to avoid that. No. So the Shah says, it's where you ate, that area you clean. You understand? So that's how you balance it. Then it will work for you. You understand? But the thinking is good. You just have to learn to direct it. Okay? Okay. Firstly, the word sattva is used here because this potency manifests the supreme truth and is thus like the sattva, goodness, that enables the unseen to be seen in this world. Secondly, the word Vasudeva is used because this potency enables one to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudeva. These two words are put together into Vasudeva Sattva, which is the same as Vishuddha Sattva, pure goodness. Right? So you can see them as supreme truth, and that enables us to understand the personality of Godhead. So you have two aspects there, understanding the supreme truth and understanding the supreme personality of Godhead. Does that make sense? So that's why it's showing that they're the same. The transcendental platform, the real point is the personality of Godhead. The personality of Godhead is on the transcendental platform. But why it's pointed out like that is because we might see one and not the other. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
But if you see the personality, that's not a problem. Can you say that? Because it's included?
Sorry?
if this point is separate, because one might see one and not see the other.
Yes.
My question is, if we see the Supreme Personality of God and that's it.
But that means the other part's already contained.
And not vice versa.
Not necessarily. Otherwise, why was that one verse said to be not favorable? Because they're seeing the Supreme. They're seeing Brahman, seeing the Supreme, seeing everything, but you don't see in any of those descriptions talk about surrender, talk about devotion. They're just saying they can see the Supreme. So that's the platform of Vishuddha Sattva. But you can see like that, they haven't come to the devotional platform. So they may not advance in devotional service. Is that a sense? The word vasu means either, whichever you want to think. That which gives a home to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or the home in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead resides. Deva means either he who enjoys transcendental pastimes or he who shines with great splendor. So, what is giving the home means the potency that's arranging it, or the home itself. Right? Because you have the Dom itself, but the Dom itself is also accommodated. So either that accommodation that the Lord is there, or the Dom itself. Or the one who shines, right, with great splendor, or the one who enjoys transcendental pastimes. So you see there's two lines here. So basically what you're talking about is the aspect of the existence of it or the actual interaction. You understand? So either the sambandha aspect. The sambandha aspect is that which gives a home to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he who shines with great splendor. Right? Or then the home in which the Supreme Lord resides and he who enjoys transcendental pastimes.
The first one is sambandha. What is this one?
That technically it would be prior. In other words, this first one is Yajna Shakti, right? And the second one is the Kriya Shakti. The Icha Shakti. Yes, he who enjoys transcendental pastimes. That's the Icha Shakti. He who shines with great splendor. That's the Yajna Shakti. Okay, go. Your turn. I've been doing it for years. Yeah? Okay. Gonna make it. Yeah? Okay. Does that make sense? So you have the jnana, which means it's just the situation of his existence. And then the icha is that then you're talking about him as a person and that enjoyment and everything that happens by the interaction with the devotees. So it indicates both. But depending upon how you're discussing it or your realization, then you're going to see it as one or the other. Right? Does that make sense? Therefore, you should not see your father, although he's the giver of your body, because he and his followers are envious of me. Because of his envy, O most worshipful one, he has insulted me with cruel words, although I am innocent. So his point is not about that I've been insulted and I can't tolerate this, so you can't go because I would feel bad. It's about that he has insulted me who is innocent, and you connected to me, he's going to insult you also. That's why we're not getting involved. Shiva doesn't need to get involved. He's happy to not have to come to these yajnas. Right? But she wants to go, so he's pointing out if she goes, then it won't work out nicely for her. Yes? Yes, he can be detached. So, yes. Yes, because it's natural, it's family. So that's why then, since this is not going to work out, she's going to be married to Shiva, and she's going to have family, then she just switches families. Right? Instead of being the daughter of Daksha, she becomes the daughter of the Himavan. So it appears that he's a more accommodating father. Right? Like that. Okay. So Does this make sense? So or you could even take it further if you wanted, that this Vasudeva could mean that either looking at it from the Jnana and Kriya Shaktis, or looking at it from the Icha. So you're looking at it from Brahman or Paramatma platform, or from Bhagavan, because generally Brahman or Paramatma, they're very close, and they're one or the other. The Jnanis, the Yogis, are very similar, so they're basically in the same boat. Right? But the devotees is the other. But when we're explaining Krishna's position, then that works for us also. It's not our ultimate position, but it works because it establishes him, his potencies, how he manifests himself, his pastimes and everything. Yes?
Nothing. We said that accommodating potency accommodates the Dhamma.
Yes.
But that would be the internal potency.
Yes, yes, yes. So all this is internal potency.
Because we work on external one.
We work on the, but still, then there's the aspect of that, because where does the potency for the material energy to accommodate? Ether, how can ether accommodate? Unless that potency has come from the all accommodating potency. Right? So that's coming from Ramadevi. Right? But that transforms, and that aspect is seen in the ether. Right? So space is there because she accommodates. So as he expands his potency, she's accommodating that as a potency. Because she is his potency to accommodate the other potencies. So that's why then that aspect of the Swarup Shakti is then considered the senior aspect. Right? Just like Advaita Acharya is the senior aspect of Godhead. Then Nityananda, then Lord Chaitanya. Right? Even though technically Lord Chaitanya is the original, then he expands as Nityananda, then as Advaita. But as far as the etiquette and the culture, they put it the other way. So in the same way, Yogamaya then will be the senior aspect of the Swarup Shakti, while Radharani will be the junior. You understand? Like that. So that makes sense. Yeah? Okay. If in spite of this instruction you decide to go, neglecting my words, the future will not be good for you. Right? Not that he's cursing or wishing, but he's just pointing out the facts. Because he just knows this mentality. You have to remember is, what is Daksha? I mean, Daksha is very qualified, he's expert, but what is he burdened under? What is the actual problem? Pride. And pride comes from what mode? And who's in charge of ignorance? And so therefore Shiva can predict exactly how it's going to work.
You don't have to be Shiva to predict how it's
going to work. No, that's why it's here. But I'm just saying here, definitely you could take it, this is horse's mouth here, right? You know, this is authoritative. You know? At the same time, just like all that she said about the material energy, the modes, and the nature of women, she's the authority, because she is, you can say, the primeval feminine personality. So all the feminine nature is expanding from her. Right? So all the unlimited variety that will be there, it's all situated from her. But she's just the transformation of the internal buds. She's the shadow. Right? Yes.
So it's proper to explain to the wife like this, in this like detached manner, like he is doing.
Yes, in this detached manner. But what's the medium of the expression of the detachment? My dear young wife, certainly friends and relatives offer mutual greetings by standing up. He's agreeing. Welcoming one and offering obeisances, right? So he has but those who are elevated to the transcendental, being intelligent, offer respects to the supersoul who is sitting in the body, who she's also acquiesced also. Not to the person who identifies with the body. Okay. Then, my dear white-complexioned wife, uh, Okay. One should not go to anyone's house, even on the consideration of being a relative or friend, when the man is disturbed in mind. So he's saying, so in other words, he's not saying, oh, that's stupid. He's taking everything. My beautiful wife, you have said that one may go to a house without a friend's house without being invited. And this is true. Right? Provided such a friend, you know, in other words, it's not that, oh, that's stupid. Oh, you're not saying, oh, you're so materially attached. You understand? So the point is being detached doesn't mean that the presentation is not proper. See, this is the point where the men will make the mistake. Because they'll take the tattva aspect of it and totally and absolutely miss the rasa aspect. And I was being euphemistic.
Very gentle.
But he's saying the facts, but it's gentle according to the nature of his wife and the points that she's made. So he's addressing the points, agreeing with the points, but pointing out that there's more to those points that she's not considering. This is the technique actually of discussion. You don't have to oppose what the person said and show it all to be stupid. You know, this is not like modern politicians where the one guy says, yes, you know, air is good. Who said air is good? This is nonsense. You know, it means that's your whole political set is based on air. You know, so this is a lot of hot air. You know, we want some substance here. We want some, you know what I'm saying? So whatever the person says, they have to say the opposite. That's why nothing gets done in modern politics. You understand? It's a matter of, yes, that's good, but what about this bigger picture? You know? Does that make sense? The people says, yes, we should do welfare work, we should do support the people who, you know, have a problem and this and that, you know, because we have to be kind, we have to be nice. And then the conservative side, yes, that's true, we have to be nice, but we have to be careful that being nice, we don't have unscrupulous people take advantage and they're getting free money when other people are working very hard for their money and being taxed. But they don't say that. They just say, this is nonsense. This welfare state is nonsense. And the other saying says, not having a welfare state, how can we say we're humans? So they just go on fighting. The point is yes, it's true, but there's this bigger aspect. Or it's true and it's a good point. You know, have you considered this point? You know what I'm saying? One aspect may be very well thought out, but then what about this next point? Because there's a line of thought. And so either the line stops or it has gaps or like that. So the points that are good are left. Or the parts that are missing, that's filled in. And if there's anything that's wrong, then you show, you know, you see its intent and then turn it around. So it may be that it as it is can be acquiesced, or it has to be that, no, only in this condition. You know what I'm saying? So it's a different type of, it's a gentle system. But it's direct and effective. It's not weak. You can say it's gentle, though it's weak. I'm just straightforward. You know, I'm bold. None of this, you know, pussyfooting around. No, this is a matter of Shiva's not pussyfooting around. But that doesn't mean you have to be gross to not pussyfoot, right? Plus, you know, get too close to the pussy and it brings out the claws, and you have a very nasty scratch across your face. So, okay. You know, it's like, what was it? Roosevelt said, American president. He said, talk softly, but carry a big stick. Right? Yeah. And he was considered one of the better. He got elected for 4 terms. And after that, they made a rule, you can only be elected 2. Otherwise, people would have kept electing him. Right? Because he was gentle, but he was firm. He had standards, he was firm, he spoke directly, but he spoke very gently how he expressed it. So the same way, you see, Shiva's discussing like that, Yudhishthira when he's discussing with Draupadi, you know, Arjuna when he was discussing with, what's her name? Urvasi. All that same principle. You're gentle, but you're firm to the point. You just have to figure out how to do that. That's where you're supposed to use the intelligence that men are very proud of. Right? Because just being blunt, that's not intelligence. Right? The bull is blunt. Right? It sees some grass, it's over there, it walks through whatever's in the way and gets to it. So that's not glorious. right, man considers himself intelligent, right, then he should use it, and this is where he should apply it. That's then man, that's intelligence. And the woman will always respect that. That's guaranteed. Now whether she'll show it so that you know she appreciates it, now that's another question. That's a totally different topic.
Post-factively.
Yeah, yes. I mean, she'll hear about it, you know, 3 years later, how she really appreciated that point. You always thought that she didn't care, right? Yeah, so. Yeah. You understand? Yeah, so it's just... you.
Some time
to soak in, yeah.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, by the time you perfect it and get it down really good, it's called Vanaprastha. But then you can tell the next generation. And so they'll have the idea in the Vedic is you go into this situation, Grihastha Ashram, with full knowledge. But it takes the Grihastha Ashram itself being applied to realize the knowledge. Nowadays, there's no realization and no knowledge. That's really bad. Because if you have the knowledge and you try, you may not be very good. Or if something goes wrong, you can understand why. And so you make the attempt. So there's two things. There's having the knowledge and then realizing the knowledge. Does that make sense? So that's the... trying to figure out where we were, but I turned the page back a few times to show the... If in spite of this instruction you decide to go neglecting my words, the future will not be good for you. You are most respectable, and when you are insulted by your relative, this insult will immediately be equal to death. So he's only concerned for her. Right? It's not about I'm correct and you're wrong. He doesn't have to prove that. He's right. He's right anyway, whether she accepts or doesn't accept. Right? But he's just worried that she will be the one who will suffer. Right? And this. Okay. Parishishta. Reference to Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakura's Bhagavat Arkham Rishi Mala. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakura assigns the following verses to Bhagavat Arkamichi Mala, chapter 4, the factual truth of Krishna, Bhagavat Surupa Tattvam, which is within the Sambandha section of the Thakur's book. I am always engaged in offering obeisances to Lord Vasudeva in pure Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is always pure consciousness, in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Vasudeva, is revealed without any covering. So that means he's revealed in his glories or he's revealed in his pastimes. Right? So that's the thing, is that this revelation is this pure consciousness reveals the name, form, qualities, and pastimes. That's the whole thing. So that's what we're trying to get to. This is what the whole process is about. Right? Now the process of Krishna consciousness is trying to cultivate this point, where Krishna is revealed without any covering. What's the covering? Our conditioning, the modes of nature. Why is it there? Because our attachment, our false identification as the controller and enjoyer rather than servant of Krishna. So we become servant of Krishna. We're the soul servant of Krishna. We're not the body. I engage the body in the Lord's service. I have habits or that connected with this body, because the body is simply a manifestation of the fruits of my endeavors for whatever it is, however many lifetimes it takes to get to this particular mentality that I am. You know, he might have looked very similar, but last life or nose is a little different, or, you know, something. So we've gotten to this one just the way we are from, you know, a whole accumulation. Right? And whatever it is, the previous, what has the mentality now, that will judge the next one. Right? So, therefore, that's going to be the natural state for us to develop our consciousness that it is in right now. So to say, I don't deal with the body, then what are you going to apply your consciousness to? Because if we're in pure consciousness, yes, okay, then you don't technically need to, but if you're going to interact on a social, then you're going to have to do it with your body. If you're just going to be a Paramahamsa, then you can move around as you please, and you won't even worry about it, because the modes of nature will take care. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's like that. You ever see the thing where you have the it's always kind of a cliche, is where you have you know, these people who are very expert at doing stuff, you know, getting across the street and this and that and driving and everything works out nicely for them. But then you have, you know, either it's like the little girl and she's going after a little butterfly, or the old lady who's just going across the street, and they're going across this thing, and they get across perfectly well with not an incident. But while they're going across, cars are crashing into it, this is happening, insanity is going on all around it, you know what I'm saying? So it's just, you know, so the modes of nature will just take care of your body. You don't have to worry about it. But if you want to interact, then you have to use the body that you have to interact with. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're a 60-year-old guy with a beard. You know, they're not going to come up to you and pinch you so you can go, oh, what a cute little kid, you know, like that. You know, it's not going to happen, right? So they're going to deal with you on that level. Well, if you look like the four Kumaras, then, you know, if they don't know who you are, they're going to, you know, think you're a bunch of kids, you know. Coming up, okay, boys, where's your mommy? We don't have a mother. Oh, I'm sorry, you mean she died? No, we were born from, you know, whatever it is. I don't know where they came from. Which was from his mind. We were born from the mind of our father. It's just, oh, that's very nice. And that's that. Hey, who's the... Yeah, okay? Yes?
Just a technical. The next life is produced by the consciousness.
Of this life, yes.
What about the spiritual body?
What about the spiritual body?
I mean, it should be in the same direction.
You're worried about that one. You're not worried if they'll have the right kind of noses or something? Or?
That's less.
No, see, the point is it's the same principle, because this is the perversion of the original principle. My consciousness in this life, right, based on that, that's going to generate the body. So this body that I have is generated from my consciousness in the last life. Right? So it's starting with your consciousness. And what does that consciousness mean? How I want to control and enjoy the material energy. Right? So what's my rati? What's my attachment? Right? So my attachment is to this kind of smells, this kind of taste, these kind of, you know, sounds, this kind of seeing, this kind of touch. Right? And these kind of environments. Right? You know, I like music that is... sounds like a construction site, and the room that is being done in is pretty much dark and you can't really see anything, and everybody kind of shakes their head, looks like their head's about to fall off, so you have to always check that the bolts are on tight. Right? Okay? So that puts you in a very specific place. Right? Does that make sense? So the whole idea is that it generates according to your attachment. Right? And the basis is I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? Now, the spiritual body is generated from the same principle that I am servant of Krishna, and I have this particular rati, or attraction, or attachment to Krishna in this particular way, in these kind of mood, in this kind of situations. So therefore, then your body will perfectly match that. So in other words, this body is according to your consciousness at present, and the spiritual body is according to your natural relationship with the Lord eternally. Right? So you don't have to worry. You're not going to have to go see some, what do you call it? Those specialists that do, they change things for you? Plastic surgeons and stuff like that. You know. Is that what you said? Yeah. Okay? Yes.
Back about the inside being worse than death.
Yes.
So one thing is that it's very common in the Western world.
Which?
It's very common.
Which?
Insulting,
yeah. I mean, in some groups, if you have your kind of these certain kind of bohemian intellectual groups, which you may or may not be familiar with, that the aspect of... talking always in a negative, kind of sarcastic, insulting way, but done as kind of in a very pleasant, friendly manner, is pretty common. But if you're from those circles, it's normal.
What? Get tired?
Oh, no, I'm just sorry. That's what I'm saying. They enjoy it. So because you're not a pure, but we're looking at a bohemian here. Right? Yeah. It's just like this take on this other side is that, okay, always pointing out how something was wrong and it could have been done better and lamenting about it, then certain groups of people can do that their whole life, while others get tired of it, and they enjoy it, right? You know? I told you one about the shirt?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so that's okay. Yes. Does that make sense? So, therefore, that is so funny. Because I didn't think about it at first. I just started off talking, and So it's just the way they like it. But the interesting thing, as she pointed out, anybody outside of that circle does not like it at all. There's those who are tolerant of it, and now and again they can handle it, but they don't like it as a regular thing. And there's those that just despise it. Right? But the funny thing, and those in that circle, they wouldn't want it any other way. You know, it's just like the old man then. He wrote and said, so I was feeling kind of, I wasn't feeling well and all this and that. So he went down to see the doctor. He did some tests. And then the results came out on my birthday. And guess what? Guess what my main present for my birthday was? Leukemia. So that's how the bohemians were. They think it's great. And they just go, oh, yeah, well, it could have been worse, You could have found out that you had, he's come up with something insane, right? It's been a long time, so it's hard to do. So, therefore, in that circles, it's all right. Just like when you go on stage, what do they say? Break a leg. They always say something inauspicious, because they figure if they said it inauspicious, then when you go, it'll be good. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is it's a weird group, but, it has its popularity, Just don't pull those ones. If you see a muscle truck with shotguns in the back window, don't pull those. Yes? No, it's all over the place.
It shows that, the relationship is established, so there's some
Yeah, but it's always insulting, always this and that. And you see is that they go, and it has to, and when they get going, the more the insults, the more they get enlivened and the interaction, and they'll say they had a great time. But if you're not from those circles, you really hate it. Like that. And see, because I know, it's just, you just see how the people do it. Just, it's...
They don't go worse than that.
Sorry?
They don't think what it is worse than that.
Because those aren't insults. You're using a medium of insults, but it's just joking. If someone actually meant it, it would be worse than death. Does that make sense? Sorry? No, she was not from those circles, so it's more obvious. But even from within that, if they really meant it, and they would know how to... It's like this, if you've always practiced being insulting, if you actually wanted to be insulting, how good would you be? Right? Pretty good. So those circles, if they want to insult you, then no one can insult you more than them. Because they're intellectual. They think about it. They got words. They can spin them all together. While you get somebody who doesn't do that, they get flustered like that. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So now it makes sense? Okay. Okay, chapter 4, Satyakwitsum. Okay, we'll take a break then. That was funny, the other day I was trying to find... Chapter 4, Satyakwitsum body. Pratigya, Sati frees herself from her relationship, subtle and gross, with Daksha, right? Because it's not that she's just not, you're not my father anymore and just doesn't see him. It's just she actually left the body and took birth from someone else so that Daksha's not her father, like that.
Extreme.
Yeah, it's extreme. The pratigya of this chapter is expressed in this excerpt from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 27. Sati at once thought of the lotus feet of her husband, Lord Shiva, who is one of the three great personalities of Godhead in charge of the management of the material world. And simply by meditating on his lotus feet, she derives such great pleasure that she forgot everything in relationship with her body. This pleasure was certainly material because she gave up her body for another body that was also material. But by this example, we can appreciate the devotee's pleasure in concentrating his mind and attention on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, Vishnu or Krishna. Right? Because the point is you're supposed to meditate on Purusha, so that would be Vishnu. But for her, as Devi, her Purusha is Shiva. But the point is she stays here, because that's where she's supposed to be. So the principle, does that make sense? Because if she meditates on Vishnu and goes to Vishnu, then she'll be Yogamaya. Right? But since she's Mahamaya, then she'll stay here. But that's why Prabhupada is saying, but the principle works as the same point. There is such transcendental bliss in simply meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord that one can forget everything but the Lord's transcendental form. This is the perfection of yogic samadhi, or ecstasy. In this verse it is stated that by such meditation she became free from all contamination. What was that contamination? The contamination was her concept of the body derived from daksha, but she forgot that bodily relationship in trance. So being absorbed in trance on her husband, she forgot the relationship with her father. And then in that state, then she left that body and then took another suitable one, right? Adhyaya Prakashi. Yes.
Can you say that it would have been less difficult if she just didn't go?
If she?
Just didn't go to the whole thing.
The hope is there, but then there is that aspect, but then this whole pastime is unwinding so that you see all these things, because, you know, wouldn't you want to see daksha put in the right perspective?
Yes.
You know? So, you know, you get your head cut off and get it replaced with a goat's head, it kind of changes your perspective on things. You know? You know what I'm saying? Because he's still daksha, he's still the position, he's still the head of the Prajapatis. Right? He still has all the same good qualities. But he walks around with a goat head.
But didn't it really change it? Because next will be his sons? Because Narada Muni is not him?
Yeah, no, it's him. But at least now he'll behave a little bit better with how long he kept the goat head, because at some point he also took birth from someone else. There's a few of them that do that. I think Bhrigu also. He's born a Brahma, but then because of a curse, he ended up taking birth as the son of Varuna. So, but it's still the same person, so you know there. So that I know if Daksha also had to take birth from somebody else because of something. I guess because he wanted to get rid of his goat head or something. I'm not sure. You know what I'm saying? Like we change bodies, you know, we forget everything and that. This is the same personality goes to the next body. So there it's unique positions. It's not very common, but it does happen. Yeah. In the fifth chapter, Sati, ignoring the forbiddance of her husband to go to the sacrifice, went there and was disrespected by her father. In anger, she criticized him and gave up her body. In the fifth chapter, should be fourth. Maitreya told Vidura that after Shiva fell silent, Sati became perturbed with indecision. In distress, she arrived at the conclusion that her husband was forbidding her to visit her family. As she made up her mind not to obey him, she glared at her uncommon husband. Accompanied by Nandishwar and thousands of followers of Shiva, Sati proceeded to her father's house, because she won't go alone, right? Anyway. There she was gladly welcomed by her mother and sisters, but nobody else, not even her father. She then noticed that no arrangements were made at the sacrifice for the offerings of oblations to Shiva. Sati expressed her complete disappointment with her father for his envy of the great soul Shiva, whose transcendental qualities she praised. Her conclusion was that daksha is offense personified. Since her body came from him, she was obliged to give that body up. In the midst of the sacrificial assembly, Sati sat down. entered the trance of meditation and burned her body to ashes with the fire of yogic mysticism. A great outcry arose. At once, Daksha's ill treatment of his extraordinary daughter became the subject of talk amongst the people. Right? Okay, he's got a problem with his brother. Okay, but now it's this whole thing that his daughter is, you know, left, so she's not actually part of his family anymore. Sati's attendants readied their weapons to attack Daksha. They tried to kill him, but were stopped when sage Bhrigu uttered powerful mantras from the Yajurveda that brought forth thousands of demigods known as the Ribhu. With flaming fuel from the Yajna fire, the Ribhus drove the hordes of Shiva away in different directions. Doesn't mean they won, but that will continue on. Shloka Anusharana. Verses 1 to 10. Sati decides to attend the sacrifice and immediately becomes offended. Verses 11 to 27. Sati preaches to her father, then quits her body. Verses 28 to 34. Lord Shiva's followers attempt to retaliate out of duty. Verses 1 to 10. Sati decides to attend the sacrifice and immediately becomes offended. The sage Maitreya said, Lord Shiva was silent after speaking to Sati, seeing her between decisions. Sati was very much anxious to see her relatives at her father's house. But at the same time, she was afraid of Lord Shiva's warning. Her mind unsettled, she moved in and out of the room as a swing moves this way and that. Sati felt very sorry at being forbidden to go see her relatives at her father's house, and due to affection for them, tears fell from her eyes. Shaking and very much afflicted, she looked at her uncommon husband, Lord Shiva, as if she were going to blast him with her vision. Sound familiar? Okay. Yeah. Things aren't right. You've got to blame somebody, right? You know,
so that's just.
Huh? Yeah, it's got to go somewhere. So, but, you know, she's moving in and out like a swing. So she's coming in and then going out like she wants to go and then thinking about, no, but he said this and goes back in and then out. So it's a real, oh, yeah, Bob. Thereafter, Sati left her husband, Lord Shiva, who had given her half his body due to affection. Breathing very heavily because of anger and bereavement, she went to the house of her father. This less intelligent act was due to her being a weak woman. Okay.
Can we say also that she became immediately offended because she was already in abandonment? Maybe after?
Not necessarily. I would say is that because she's a qualified person and she wants to go see. It's just that she then saw that what she was talking about was correct. Because it's like this, if you're the favorite daughter, you would never expect that your father would neglect you. So Shiva's saying, because of his envy towards him, her husband, he will also manifest that towards her. She doesn't believe that'll happen. You know, she's worried about it, but she doesn't believe it will happen. Therefore, then when it does happen, you know, she's aware of it. Because the point is it's very, very common. Does that make sense? Yes.
Still, he was gentle, but she was angry afterwards.
Say?
She was gentle.
Yeah.
Explain gently, but she was angry afterwards.
Then what's the problem?
There is no problem. She was just angry, I think.
No, but this is... You're talking about a nature. It's just the way it is.
Anyway, would you like it?
If things are right, they're happy. If they're not right, they're not happy. So if they're not happy, see, if you do something, you get a result. Women are religious, right? You do an activity, it gets a result. So if the result is she's unhappy, that means somebody did an activity, and she didn't. So then, who's supposed to see that she doesn't end up in those situations? Right. So therefore, she's angry at him.
This is my problem.
Yeah, but this is, did we say anything wrong?
No, that's typical.
Yeah, so, you understand? And here, typical means that's just the way it works. Now, there'll be a little variety within it. How angry, how this, you know what I'm saying? That's the uniqueness of the individual. If the husband's supposed to take care of the wife, if she runs into any inconvenience, then ultimately it's his problem why it's like that. It doesn't matter that this happened, that happened, well, this had that, and that went there, and that one tripped over this, and that knocked over that, and so that started this, and that made an earthquake here, and so therefore there was a tsunami in Tokyo. Right? But it doesn't matter. The point is the buck stops with the husband. So it's like this. These are the things. The man thinks, okay, the man's in charge. He's the authority. But this is what being the authority means. So the man is happy to accept that he's the authority, but not to accept what authority means. You understand? It's the complete package. Just like, do you like dinner? Yes. It wasn't a trick question. Okay. But dinner costs money, right? Who pays? You. So you can't say, I like the dinner, but I don't like the money. Just like there was one, I was in one house in England. I thought it was quite amusing. We're going through something like this about the cosmetics and this and that. And then one lady raised her hand and says, well, my husband says I should look beautiful, but I can't use... that without using any cosmetics, he doesn't want to spend any money on cosmetics. He just says it's a waste of money. He wants me to look beautiful like the models who are using cosmetics. He's not saying, I like you in your natural state, I don't like cosmetics, I like you to just that natural beauty, right? He's not saying that, because I heard that happen with one devotee girl was saying that when she was younger, you know, before she joined, she was going to the prom. So this boy came to pick her up. She never wore makeup. Right? But for the prom, she wore all this makeup. And so he came to the door, in the tuxedo and the whole thing there, the car and waiting, and knocks on the door, you know, like that. She answers the door and he sees her in the makeup. And then he says, excuse me, but I came to pick up, and he mentions her name. And then she says, what do you mean? That's me. He says, no, it can't be you, because she's so beautiful. She never wears makeup. She just has this natural beauty. So it can't be you. You're wearing makeup. So then she understood. She went back inside, took off the makeup, just was normal, came out, there you are. And then they went to the prom. You understand? So some of the things, but that's, we're not talking about this. We're talking about a husband that wants his wife to look, you know, like on the front of LA or something like that. You know, Vogue and all this and that, which is all done with makeup. But he says, no, I'm not giving any makeup. You have to make it happen without it. You understand? So is that intelligent or no?
No.
No. Okay. So that's the whole point. Is if you're going to get the thing that you're the authority, you're the be all and end all of the wife's happiness. That means you're the be all and end all of her distress. Also, the two go together.
That's okay, but he tried his best.
He tried his best, but she's a woman. You want the woman to act like a man. If you do, then you just hang out down at the pub. Okay, you wouldn't do that. Okay, but it's there's no alcohol. It's non-alcoholic beer. You know, non-alcoholic Bavarian beer.
Doesn't work.
Huh?
Doesn't work.
Doesn't work. Okay, you understand? So the whole point is that it's about this masculine-feminine dynamic. The woman, that's the way she is. It's never going to be that she responds the same way twice in any given situation. If you want her to be the same, I said this, you have to do that, then don't marry a woman. You know what I'm saying? Get yourself a nice cutout. Figure out which woman you like. You know, take a picture, blow it up to full size, cut it out, you know, stand it up, you know, in the corner of the room, and then you can talk to her. She'll smile to you all day. You never have to worry about it. You know, or if you really want a better solution, just stay at home and live with your mom. She'll always smile, she'll always cook, she'll always wash your socks. Right? Doesn't mean she won't criticize, but she'll do it. You understand? So the point is the woman never responds that that's what variety means. So it's not that. That's the problem. Is the men think I got it down here. It's a technique. That's for making your carburetor work, or getting the lock, the key to work in the door, or like that. This is not a trick. You're dealing with a nature that it creates variety. That's what feminine means. Feminine means constantly creating variety. So that means you have to be at every moment trying to keep up with that. So this means he's tried his best here, she does this. You'll see what he does. You know, he's not going to let her go on her own. He's going to follow, but at some distance because she's upset and wants to go on her own. He's there, but just following just behind. You know? And when things don't go well, then things don't work out so well for Daksha. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Does this make sense? So you're dealing with the nature of a woman, that women deal like this. This is normal. You don't say, this is weird. No, this is normal. Does that make sense? Okay.
Sometimes you ask why you do like this, and she says, this is my nature, and you do like this.
Yes, so you just said, but you have to figure out the principle of what she's doing. Not the thing immediate, because that will change. But there's a principle, there's a consistent principle. I mean, an individual woman will work on a consistent principle within a certain range of variety. You know, it won't go outside of that. Except now and again you push the limits, because you've moved in that circle and that variety so much, you have to do something that pushes the limits, then you go back to the comfort again. You know what I'm saying? But it's the principle that it works on. So she's working on this. And she's already explained. She's very nicely explained what the nature of a woman is. Because if a man said it, then it wouldn't be believed. Right? If the man says, I mean, the man says all this stuff, you go, oh, he's just biased. But if the woman says it, then you have to accept. You understand? So this is the way it is. It's not like, well, they shouldn't be like that, or they should change. No, this is just the way it is. That's the whole point to understand and accept. Does that make sense? So, therefore, Shiva accepts this. So that's, he said his thing. She's not, this, because he's talking, but he can see she's not becoming convinced. She's considering it and not convinced. And so, what more is there to say? Right? So therefore then she's undecided to stay, go, she goes back and forth, but then at some point she goes. Because the point is that she wants to be with her relatives, he's saying things that are true that keeps her from going. So he's getting in the way of her seeing her relatives, which is true. But it's also true that what he says is what is going to be the situation. But the whole point is now, what does it mean by less intelligent? Right? Sati got there. She couldn't see that her father was envious. She didn't notice that he didn't set up an arrangement for Shiva's place in the yajna. She didn't notice any of that because she's stupid. No, she figured it all out because she's smart. But what's the definition of third-class intelligence? When you experience it, then it's true. So that means when the experience is there, then full intelligence is applied. But what we're saying is not first class, because first class is Shiva says this is what's going to happen, and then she understands that, and okay. Now, if there wasn't such an attachment to the family, then it may have worked in that situation, but there's always going to be a situation where the third class intelligence is required. You know, if there's no attachment, first-class intelligence works for the woman also. You understand? But where there's attachment, then you say, this is what will happen. They have to actually experience, and then, okay, here it is. But as soon as it's there, then they act on that intelligent platform. Does this make sense? So you have to understand is that women are intelligent, but it's third-class intelligence. I mean, it's not by hearing, it's not by seeing. but it's by doing themselves, because they hear about it, it doesn't affect. They see others, it doesn't affect. But when it affects them, now they're realized. Right? So that's the thing. But most men function the same way. Because if the man is attached to a woman, then he's attached to third-class intelligence, so there's a good chance he might even have fourth-class. Right? But you, by first class, you understand, you, then there may be no need to get involved. Does that make sense? So the Naisthika Brahmachari means, by first class intelligence, he can see there's no need to get involved. Or it may be he's heard but hasn't realized, then as he goes out and he's begging and is moving in the world, he sees it and then gets realized and then remains a Brahmachari. But if not, then he knows what to do. He'll get married and he'll be a good grihastha. Right? And so then that combination between having heard, having the knowledge, and then experiencing it, he'll get realization. Does that make sense? Yes? Okay. According to the Vedic conception, Srila Prabhupada comments in verse 3, according to the Vedic conception of family life, the husband gives half his body to his wife, and the wife gives half of her body to her husband. In other words, a husband without a wife or a wife without a husband is incomplete. The Vedic marital relationship existed between Lord Shiva and Sati, but sometimes due to weakness, a woman becomes very much attracted by the members of her father's house. And this happened to Sati, right? Because she grows up there, she has all these nicer remembrances, and that especially the more time passes, the greater it looks. Right? You know, it's the way it is with anything. You know, when you're, let's say, you went to high school, it was hell, right? But then when you're, you know, 30 years old, talking with your friends, you goof about what it was like. Because so much time has gone by. You know? So, but in her case, being the pet child, it was nice. Everything was perfect. Materially. But the problem is that since she married a spiritual person, her father couldn't digest that, and therefore it causes all this enmity. Therefore, going back to that situation won't be good. So she has that. So sometimes she wants to go back, experience that again. It may be good. It may be fine. Why would the husband say no if it's a good situation? Right? Right? Because if he goes there, then he's the Jamai Babu. Right? He's the special guy. Right? No? But if he's not, if it's not a good relationship, you don't want to go. Because it'll just be insults all around. Right? So is it? In this verse, it is specifically mentioned that she wanted to leave such a great husband as Shiva because of her womanly weakness. In other words, womanly weakness exists even in the relationship between husband and wife. Right, so this idea is, how can there be, you know, the charts are good, this, that? No, because it's always work. Nature is nature. Right? So there has to be the work. So then it'll work out. Because, you know, for most people, their wife's not sati, that if she gets insulted, that she sits down in meditation and burns up her body to ashes. Right? So after the program's over, the two will go home, and then, you know, you'll work on it. She'll understand it was wrong, but he can't. If he says, "I said you so," then you have another war, right? So you don't say that. You're just a supporter. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes. No. Yeah. Never use "I told you so." She can use it. You have to understand. Most things are a one-way street. Anything would do with you, it means if it's yours, it's hers. If it's hers, it's hers. You know, it's pretty standard, straightforward. Understand? That's the illusion. Right? See, it's a point like this. The women are saying they want equal, means half. But it's not equal in the first place. It's 90-10. They want half of your 10. That's what they're talking about. That's the when they say 50%, they mean 50% of your 10. Yeah, well, it's just, you know, yeah, that's the real thing. It's good. There's a Marwari saying, first take the little finger, then take the whole hand. You start with the little finger. Yeah, see? Come on, great minds think alike, right? Okay. Does that make sense? But, so you could kind of reword the song into "it's a man, it's a woman's world." Okay. Generally, separation between husband and wife is due to womanly behavior. Divorce takes place due to womanly weakness. The best course for a woman is to abide by the orders of her husband. Because generally, if you check, even if you've seen statistics, 90% of all divorces are initiated by the woman. Like that. So the whole point is that it's the idea is that the Vedic concept, there's no divorce, then people will work harder. Right? In the modern, if you can get divorced, then it's just as soon as there's a problem, immediately you just throw it out. But the Vedic, there's no divorce, therefore they work harder at it. Right? Does that make sense? And then in that situation, if it doesn't work, then that's another thing. But they've given a full effort. But if you say it's available, then people won't try hard enough. If you say it's not available, people will try harder. Right? And then if it doesn't work, then that's an exception. But it never becomes the rule. Like in the West, it's standard. It's okay. People get divorces. They have prenup. Why? Because they expect there may be a divorce. Right? Otherwise, what do you need that for? You know, who gets the poodle, who gets the, you know, the Winnie the Pooh bear, you know, all these things. You don't have to write those all down. You know what I'm saying? But because there's a concept there may be divorce, so therefore, then that happens. Does that make sense? So people don't try as hard. The best course for a woman is to abide by the orders of her husband. That makes family life very peaceful. Sometimes there may be misunderstandings between husband and wife, as found even in such an elevated family relationship as that of Sati and Lord Shiva. But a wife should not leave her husband's protection because of such misunderstanding. Right? The point is to work it out. But he should be making the endeavor to try to work it out. It's not that, oh, it's all the woman's fault, she's got to work it out. No, the point is they have to do the work, and he has to take the lead. Right? Does that make sense? She's upset. Who has to try to talk? Him. Right? But anyway, you try to talk, she doesn't want to listen. You know, she doesn't, you know, shut up, get out of here, this, that. But you have to still try. Does that make sense? It's just the nature of what you're dealing with. You're dealing with energy. Energy is volatile. Does that make sense? Huh? Did he? You didn't say beetroot, did you? Poor guy. Oh, poor guy. Okay, yeah. Okay. If she does so, it is understood to be due to her womanly weakness. So that's why you want to make sure that the natures are very similar. Not based on the body, based on the, means the body has to match, but more important is the subtle body matches. That's the most important. Right? Does that make sense? Because that's what's going to make things function. If you can work things out on the subtle body, then it'll work. If the mind, intelligence, egos, those things can match, then it works perfectly. So that's why the modern thing is just on the body, what they look like. Then it's not a problem. When they saw Sati leaving home, leaving alone very rapidly, thousands of Lord Shiva's disciples, headed by Maniman and Mada, quickly followed her with his bull Nandi in front and accompanied by the Yakshas. Srila Prabhupada points out, the word Anuchara is also significant. For it indicates that Lord Shiva's disciples were always ready to sacrifice anything for Lord Shiva. All of them could understand the desire of Shiva, who did not want Sati to go alone. Anuchara means those who can immediately understand the purpose of their master. So that's a good servant. Prabhupada says that's a good servant. You can understand the without being told, you can understand what needs to be done. That's first class. Right? Then if you need to be told and you get it done, that's that. If you get told and you still can't get it done, that's then another thing, right? So that's what you think is you're being. So without being told, they figure it out. So they knew he wants, because he has affection for his wife. He doesn't want her to go alone. So they know. Okay, they go with him. Right? That makes sense. The disciples of Lord Shiva arranged for Sati to be seated on the back of a bull and gave her the bird, which was her pet, right? Because she's going. So they make all the arrangements. They bore a lotus flower, a mirror, and all such paraphernalia for her enjoyment, and covered her with a great canopy. Right? So she's going to go in style, you know, which is according to her position, right? You were saying, yeah, she's got nothing. But, you know, all the stuff's there. It's just where they keep it, who knows? But it is so fun.
It doesn't matter if she was morose, she's still dressed up. They gave her a mirror.
But it says, and all such, a lotus flower, a mirror. So when you talk about paraphernalia, you count the lotus flower as one of them? No, so you can imagine what else goes along with an all such paraphernalia. Right, there'll be the pet bird, there'll be the little box with the pond, all the different things, the fans, you know, it's all there. It's all... Yeah, some snack if you want to. No, it's good. And then covered with a great canopy, right? Followed by a singing party with drums, conch shells, and bugles, right? So even music. The entire procession was as pompous as a royal parade. Right. So nowadays you have to turn on the car radio or something like this. Before it was you had a live band going with you. Now that's going in style, right? Because even the demigods, they're going in their airplanes. They don't have all the music and all the followers. It's just husband and wife. She's going with this whole, you know, it's a whole party here. She then reached her father's house where the sacrifice was being performed and entered the arena where everyone was chanting the Vedic hymns. The great sages, brahmanas, and demigods were all assembled there, and there were many sacrificial animals, as well as pots made of clay, stone, gold, grass, and skin, which were all requisite for the sacrifice. Right, because they all hold different things. Right, so any, like, you have special oils or different things like that, those go in the ones that are made with skin, because it doesn't react like that. I don't know if you've ever seen, you've gone into these old shops that sell all these perfumed oils, the traditional shops in India, and you see these skin bottles like that. Never seen those. But when I came to India, that's what they were all kept in. They didn't use glass. When they'd sell it, they'd give it to you in a glass bottle. It wasn't stored in there because the glass will still react with it. The skin won't. So they have those things. Some of those may have gone back to father made, grandfather made. You know, you have some special musk or something, some very expensive thing that got it made, then they still have. You know, so it's just perfect for the thing. So there are all these things, clay, stone, all these things. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 6, when learned sages and brahmanas assembled to chant Vedic mantras, some of them also engaged in arguing about the conclusions of the scriptures. Thus, some of the sages and brahmanas were arguing, and some were chanting the Vedic mantras. So the entire atmosphere was surcharged with transcendental sound vibration. This transcendental sound vibration has been simplified in the transcendental vibration, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It being the original mantra, that means all the Vedic mantras are contained within the Hare Krishna mantra. So if you're chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, you're getting the benefit of the whole Veda. Right? Because that's what Manu says. Brahman chanting japa, he has the benefit of having chanted the whole Veda. Like that. And even more so, here he's talking about just chanting Brahma Gayatri, you get the benefit of the whole Veda. Because the whole Veda expands from the Brahma Gayatri. But the Brahma Gayatri is expanded from the Kama Gayatri, which is expanded from Hare Krishna. So if you're chanting Hare Krishna, then the benefit of all the Vedas are there.
Right. They were arguing, and still it's the transcendental sound vibration.
Because they're discussing conclusions of Scripture. You know, how would you apply? Because this vichar, looking at it from different angles, someone, you know, like someone's very renounced, you have to give up everything, move to the forest, then you can see the... Then someone says, no, you have to connect everything by renunciation, like that. So they're all true, but they're just which point to bring out for which situation.
So that's the real rhetoric.
That's logic that they're doing. So it's not about winning. It's about concluding. So now in the conclusion, you may make the nigrahasta, you may make the final point that defeats the other person. Because you've been, making points, 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 and then you see exactly where the weakness is or where the doubt is. And then seeing that, you make the final presentation. And then that now clears the doubt, and now the conclusion is attained. Right? So all these things are there. You know, just like you're saying there, is you're taking challah, as we were discussing, they using the word in one way, and you show that that's there, but then actually the bigger picture is the other way to use it. But you're using them all in a positive way to come to conclusion. When they're not used for conclusion, it's only to win an argument, then that's rhetoric. Does that make sense? But it's not that, it's called rhetoric. It's not that you're not using rhetoric in the logical process. But it's not about rhetoric, it's about the logic. You know, just like, let's say, if I say the word tantra, what comes to mind? Yeah, black magic connected with Shiva or Durga or Kali or something like that. But tantra simply means ritual. So when we like do artic for Prabhupada, that's tantra. But that's Vaishnav tantra. Tantra simply means you have mantra, which is the sound vibration, and tantra is the ritual that you apply it with the mantra. So you have tamasic, rajasic, sattvic tantras. Right? And then you have the, you know, the transcendental tantra, which is transcendental tantra. You understand? But by nature it gets that. So when we say rhetoric, it takes on its own life, that it's just how to argue to win. But actually the point is that you're trying to make your point because of the trying to come to the conclusion, so you're using the techniques to win. But at the same time, if someone else is able to bring out that conclusion, then that's actually what you want. So it's not about winning, it's about coming to the conclusion. When Sati with her followers reached the arena, because all the people assembled there were afraid of Daksha, none of them received her well. No one welcomed her but her mother and sisters, who, with tears in their eyes and with glad faces, welcomed her and talked with her very pleasingly. So they're so glad she came, but at the same time they're so sad that no one else is dealing. Right? So therefore there's such a difference. Right? Although she was received by her sisters and mother, she did not reply to their words of reception. And although she was offered a seat and presence, she did not accept everything. For her father neither talked with her nor welcomed her by asking about her welfare. You know, it was, means he's there, they're all together, but he doesn't look, doesn't talk anything. Srila Prabhupada explains, Sati was the youngest child of Daksha, and she knew that she was his pet. But now, because of her association with Lord Shiva, Daksha forgot all his affection for his daughter. And this very much aggrieved her, right? Because you grow up in that, that's what you expect. That's why she wants to go back to the father's house, to experience that affection that was there when she used to be at the house. Right? You know, not that she wants to stay there, she wants to experience that again, then get from that, go back to her house. Right? So Daksha forgot all the affection for his daughter, and this very much aggrieved her. The material bodily conception is so polluted that even upon slight provocation, all our relationships of love and affection are nullified. Bodily relations are so transient that even though one is affectionate towards someone in a bodily relationship, a slight provocation terminates this intimacy. Present in the arena of sacrifice, Sati saw that there were no oblations for her husband, Lord Shiva. Next, she realized that not only had her father failed to invite Lord Shiva, but when he saw Lord Shiva's exalted wife, Daksha did not receive her either. Thus, she became very greatly angry. Right? So that's what she was talking about. So he thought he's just trying to keep her from coming and seeing her family and experiencing that niceties from being in the house because of his argument with Daksha. But she's figuring that's between her father and her husband, and it has nothing to do with her. But Shiva's pointing out, no, it's much greater than that. It's actually the envy of the position and of that transcendental state, and therefore she will be implicated in his envy. And so because of that, he's not going to deal properly at all. So now she can immediately see what he's talking about. Right? Because she doesn't expect it. No, why would the daughter expect that the father would deal with it differently because of her husband? they have a bad relationship, that's one thing, but they have their natural relationship. But as pointed out here, on the material platform, even something slight can break that. Thus she became greatly angry, so much so that she looked at her father as if she were going to burn him with her eyes, right? See, Shiva, she was just upset. She wasn't going to burn him with his eyes. But now Daksha, she is, you know, it looks like. As if, because if she wanted to, he'd be the pile of ashes, not her. Right? But then if she burnt up Daksha, she's still the daughter of Daksha. So if you really want to get rid of the problem, you get rid of her relationship with Daksha, so she gets rid of her body. Does that make sense? Yeah. The followers of Lord Shiva, the ghosts, were ready to injure or kill Daksha. But Sati stopped them by her order. Right? She became angry in that, and so because they're there, they're ready to get rid of this guy, right? You know? She was very angry and sorrowful. And in that mood, she began to condemn the process of sacrificial fruit of activities and persons who are very proud of such unnecessary and troublesome sacrifices. Right? Because it's one thing you're doing them because of duty, but it's another thing that you're proud of them and think they're very important. Like, why did Yudhishthira, Rajasuya, is one of the biggest sacrifices you can do here. What was his reason for wanting to do it? One, it means his father had requested it, Narada had mentioned to it, said it's a good idea. But what was the thing that interested Krishna about it? Sorry? No. Because in the sacrifice, one, if it's a sacrifice, Krishna will come as a relative and help. So they get his association. And two, in the sacrifice, you have to name and worship the senior most person in the assembly, and that will be Krishna. So now he gets to establish Krishna as the supreme person amongst all the kings, sages, demigods, everybody who's present. Now that's preaching. So well worth a Rajasuya sacrifice for that. Right? Does that make sense? If you could have all the heads of state together in one program, and they've come to your program, and at the program, then you announce and that Krishna is the senior most and are going to worship him as the supreme personality of Godhead. And they all are, except for a few, okay. But basically, you all accept that. Now, is that preaching or is that preaching? Right? So, that's what he's interested in. Just that he gets the association of Krishna and gets to glorify Krishna. So it's not about the benefit from it. That doesn't matter. So that's what she's pointing out, is those that take it as very important, they're less intelligent. She especially condemned her father speaking against him in the presence of all. Right? So just as he condemned Shiva in front of all, now she's condemning him in front of all. That the real reason is he's saying that it's all, he's irreligious, but it's actually, he's totally mundane. He doesn't understand transcendence, the higher purposes of life, the purposes of the yogi, anything. So then she's saying what should have been said by Nandi. Right? Because that's the real problem. It's not about cursing and counter-cursing. It's about the truth is that he's a materialist. Okay? Thank you. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Janitai Gaura.